Hey everyone, welcome to the Small Screen Couch Commentary Podcast, where we watch your favorite TV shows, give you our thoughts, and ask for yours. I'm Alex.
And I'm Billy. We're excited to watch and rewatch the best TV shows from start to finish and hope you're ready to take the ride along with us.
We'll talk about the best characters and their stories, reveal some hidden gems, and look for you to do the same.
From sci-fi to comedy, drama to anime, we've got it all covered. So grab your favorite snack and we'll see you on the couch.
All right, we are back at it, people. Episode 2, Season 2, Small Screen Couch Commentary, The Boys.
The Boys.
And I just want to say...
Proper preparation and planning, name of the episode. Just wanted to give you that little tidbit.
Thank you.
Tidbit. Yes.
I just want to say that the twists and turns that this show takes sometimes, I just don't know where it's going. And it, I like it because once they start, then I'm kind of like, okay, well, how are they gonna fix this? With couple things happening in this episode that I'm like, how are you gonna get out of this jam,
dude? Just the show, I think overall, it has its slow moments, but compared to other shows, their slow moments are freaking wild.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? Because even the moments where it's kind of like story driven, they're intense.
Yeah. So first things first, what were you snacking on?
I didn't snack on anything. I just had water.
Okay. Hey, you know what? Yeah. Got to stay hydrated.
It was a late night, and I was like, I'm not snacking late, but I am thirsty, so I drank some water.
So I will say this. This was a two-parter for me. I started watching it last night.
Mm-hmm.
It got a little bit late. I wanted to make sure I was good and fresh to continue watching the show. So I watched half of it last night, half of it this morning. So when I started last night, I was still snacking on the tortilla chips and beef cheese dip. Delicious. Finished it this morning. Homemade waffle.
Oh, the burnt homemade waffle?
No. That was the burnt one was the last one that I made.
Okay.
I made my son's in the waffle iron, got him prepped, made mine. I started the next one, and then I started to eat mine and completely forgot about it. It wasn't burnt to the point where I was like, oh my gosh, like there's smoke and, you know, my house is about to be on fire or whatever. But definitely like
crispy.
Yeah, it was super crispy.
As if Homelander like laser eyed it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
Like his breast milk.
Oh, disgusting. Another disgusting moment in this episode too, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll get into that. What was the rating that you gave this episode?
I kind of had it around the same as the episode before, but it had a little more intensity to it, so I put 8.4.
Okay. I actually went 8.0 again.
Oh, so we were dancing around, like, you were at 8.0 last time.
Yeah.
I went a little this point ahead.
Both these two episodes I felt were kind of like on an even keel here. If anything, I would say this episode was a little slower paced,
mm-hmm.
but there were certain parts that developed things a little bit more. So that's why, even though it was a little bit slower paced, the development was there. So I just kept it even.
For me, the character interactions and some of the intensity between characters episode is what made it a little bit better.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I am thinking, though, next episode, I have a prediction. It's probably going to get crazy. It has to. Because there hasn't been really like any crazy, crazy action yet. I mean, there's been some moments for mm-hmm. sure. Susan's head blowing up, Nakib and Black Noir fight.
Yeah.
And
a dude lifting a boat out of the water and throwing it at people.
So there's been some moments.
Yeah.
But there hasn't been anything that I'm like, oh shit.
Yet.
So I'm thinking next episode.
You didn't do that when Rainer's head blew up?
Okay, I did do that. I forgot.
Yeah.
That was an oh shit moment.
That is an oh shit moment. This show's a good oh shit moment show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also just feel like there were more of those more often throughout season one. Yes, there were a few episodes where there was like some lulls and stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like each episode, or most of them, the majority of the episodes had like more than one oh shit moment, I feel.
Yeah, and I think now you're expecting them, so sometimes some of the minor oh shit moments aren't really oh shit moments for you.
I think that's kind of it too. I think it's kind of like season one propped me up to be expecting so much shit to happen. Now that I'm in season two, I'm like, okay, when is it? It's kind of like I don't know, you like, I've built a tolerance.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Not a bad thing or a good thing necessarily, but it's just what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is.
So let's quick just go through the entire episode here.
Fly through it. Let's go.
The last episode ends with Billy coming back to the boys and basically telling like, okay, I'm here. I'm going to save your asses because you guys couldn't do it on your own. And I want to say this. There is not a moment that goes by since I've said it that when Billy's talking to them or has any sort of like monologue or whatever where he's talking to the boys and it's, you know, more than just a couple of seconds, like when he has some moments where he's just talking for a little while, I still can't get Jack Sparrow out of my head.
I know. He's Captain Jack Sparrow.
He really is. I mean, it's like the way he talks, his mannerisms even a little bit. Even some points where he's like walking around and he's kind of like just shuffling about. I'm like, and I'm not saying this in a bad way. Like,
right.
It's not like, he's just a Jack Sparrow clone. Like, it reminds me of him. And Jack Sparrow is like a great character in the Pirates movies. And it's not a dig at him at all.
No, he's rated R Jack Sparrow.
That's couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
He is a rated R Jack Sparrow.
He's not drunk all the time, walk around like, you know, Jack Sparrow's right. Drunk all the time. But yeah, sure. He's a pirate, drank rum.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's, I think, why he's such a good character is he, like you said, he plans everything out on a whim, but it all seems to always work out for him.
Yeah. He's flying by the seat of his pants, but it's just his style and
works for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we kind of start back here then with Billy, we kind of see then what took place after his encounter with Homelander at the end of season 1. He has a note with him, and we don't see what the note says at first, or we don't know where the note came from, but he has a note with him. He's in the boys' headquarters, and it has just some random words on it.
Yeah, like what?
Yellow,
how?
Ranch.
Yeah, Yellow Rancher.
Big Pines.
Yeah.
I think it even had maybe like, I don't know if it was like longitude and latitude or some directions or something, but it's just a bunch of scribbled out words, right?
Yeah.
And that gives us a clue as to where he was after the events of season 1.
Yes. So he has a bit of a flashback.
Yeah.
And it's him waking up. Well, he sees Becca walking out, seeing him.
Right.
Like at the end of season 1, but then he's on the ground somewhere else. He's waking up kind of the same way he did in her lawn.
Right.
But
right.
Now it's at a
parking lot
at Cicero's. What's it called? A Tony Cicero's?
Something like that.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
No, you have, though. You have.
Tell me.
Maybe I'll say this is a small screen scoop, actually.
All right, small screen scoop for later.
Yeah.
You got to stay and listen. We're not getting it right now.
So, he goes into this restaurant, and he's like, where am I? She says the name of the restaurant.
Yeah.
And then he's like, but what city am I in? And she says it, but
I don't remember. My apologies.
But either way, he's like, I need something to write with. And the hostess is just kind of confused. Like, I need something to give, you know, whatever. So she gives him like the little pack of crayons.
No, he just takes them.
Oh, okay.
Because she doesn't know what to do. So he's like, fuck it. And he just grabs the crayons and the kid's paper.
Right.
And
right.
Turns over
That's
and
when
starts writing scribbling
all this
stuff. The things that he remembered so he can kind of figure out where Becca is.
Right.
Because obviously, now they know she's alive. That's his mission, is to go back and find her.
Absolutely.
But then they see on the news this guy's wanted for killing Madeline. And he looks at the hostess, and she looks at him, and he's like, I'm going to go now.
Yeah.
But I want to say, I don't know if it was the last episode or this episode. Did you notice, remember how you started the podcast, like the first episode, you kept calling him Billy the Butcher?
Yes.
Now they are starting to call him Billy
the Butcher.
Billy the Butcher. Yeah. So it all comes back around.
Yeah. Yeah. The Matrix is matrixing.
Yep.
So we then get back to the boys. They're in their little drug dealer gun runner hideout. And Kimiko is trying to communicate something to them.
To Frenchie.
And I don't remember if it was in the first episode or if it's in the beginning of this episode or maybe even both. Kimiko is trying to kind of learn English through writing.
Yeah.
She's practicing writing letters, similar to like, you know, what a child would have like in a workbook, like where it's like you see the outline, you have to trace it or whatever.
Yeah.
So she's been trying to learn English.
Yeah, that was last episode. It was in the beginning when he was leaving. He's like, oh, that's looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's trying to communicate with Frenchie, and he's just telling her like,
I don't understand you.
Yeah.
I don't understand you.
I don't understand you.
But
she's whatever she's trying to communicate to her seems very important.
Very important to her, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, and I think at some point it's boy is what she's like saying to him. Boy.
Right.
And
but he doesn't know what that means.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, boy, good job. It's a boy. Because they're watching the video of the surveillance video again of the guy who lifts up the boat. And she keeps saying boy, and he's like, yeah, that is a boy. Good job.
Right.
You know?
Right. Homelander, he now in this episode, after having gotten reamed out, you know, professionally, of course, by Mr. Edgar, he's kind of now
almost living over at Becca's.
Well, he goes back.
Yeah.
And she's not happy to see him. And yeah, he goes to her house and is talking with her son and kind of sort of trying to like play dad.
You know,
they're like playing catch and he's talking with him in his room. And yeah, he's kind of being like a live-in dad. But
yeah,
we'll get a little further into that.
Yeah, I feel like this episode, two of the stories take place almost in one spot the whole episode. And then one of them, the boys, is more out and about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But then there's also the continuation of the storyline with the Deep and the therapist.
And Fresca.
And more Fresca. That
and more scenes that I fast-forward past.
You did, again? You fast-forwarded here again?
Yeah, I hate the Gills. I hate them.
I mean, I don't like them either, but there's importance
it's
with
very
the
important,
in
yeah.
this episode.
So. But good for me, I already seen you the already episode, yeah. So I don't need to see it again.
But then aside from the Deep, then there's also a press day. So if we recall from the first episode, there's a new hero in the Seven. And she is kind of now paired up with Starlight and with Maeve.
Mm-hmm.
They're having a, you know, like
girls rule.
Yeah. Yeah, I forget exactly what they called
it. Girls get it done.
Girls get it done. There it is. Mm-hmm. Have the girls get it done, like press conference.
Yeah.
And some things happen there that are pretty big. So we'll get into that as well. Towards the middle of the episode here, we now see Grace Mallory again.
Mm-hmm.
And she has some interactions with Billy because she's at Susan Rayner's funeral. And Billy's trying to get back with her trying to get some things going with her.
Yeah, get some more information, yeah.
Right, right. We also see then that another character, which I don't want to reveal until a little bit later, but another character from season one, who we only got a couple glimpses of, comes back into the picture. And I'm thinking maybe they'll have a more prominent role this season. I don't know. It would seem weird if they didn't. But they are in there with one of the Seven who has an emergency at one point, or they say they have an emergency. So we'll get into that.
Oh, okay.
Let's see here. What else do we have? Starlight. So we remember at the last episode, she and Huey have a plan to get Compound V from one of the lab people at Vought, and she gets it, but might end up screwing her a bit
yeah.
in the end here because someone else returns as well.
Yeah.
And we then find out exactly what Kimiko was trying to communicate to the boys towards the end of the episode here.
Yep.
And this is a major thing that I'm wondering how this is going to turn out here, because it could go a couple of different ways, I think, moving forward. And I will say this whole situation was probably the highlight of the episode for me, in
okay.
my opinion.
Okay.
But I also wish that there were more, because it was one of the coolest things I thought in this episode, but it was kind of just too short, in my opinion.
Okay.
The initial interaction was cool, and then there's other stuff that happens, and I'm like, oh, this could be dope, and then it was, but just very short-lived,
yeah,
in my opinion.
I get it. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. And that's kind of the one thing I've found, is that sometimes when you get these moments that, like, there's either some build-up to it, or even if there's not, where there's some things that happen, and it's like a sequence of stuff, I wish it was a little bit longer. And I get that it's a show and they've only got an hour and they've got a lot that they have to try and convey and whatever. But I just feel like if they would just dedicated a couple more minutes even to some things. Like, I remember the one thing you were not disappointed with, but one of these situations where you were wanting more was that race between A-Train and Shockwave.
Right, yeah.
You know, I thought that was something that they could have fleshed out a little bit better too. So,
yeah,
but we'll talk about
my picky thing on this episode is there's no cars in New York City.
What do you mean?
Every time we see people in New York City in this episode, there's no traffic, nothing, no cars.
I don't know if I picked up
it's
on
late
that
night,
necessarily.
But it's like, yeah.
But at the same time, New York City, I mean, there
it
are
has
tons
side,
of cars.
It has side streets.
There's
yeah.
tons of cars, for sure. But it's very much a commuter city. Like, people are either walking or taking the subway or, you know, there's a lot of regular...
Well, then there's nobody walking either. There's just nobody living in New York City.
I don't know.
Unless they're right by Vought Tower.
I haven't picked up on that. Now that you've said it, I'm probably going to try and look out for that.
Yeah, it was just this episode I noticed it, but yeah.
But, that's interesting. You know, it's funny. You almost remind me of Clarissa because we'll be watching a show like the moment, a very similar moment she had was one time we were watching The Walking Dead, not to go off into tangent land too far. We're watching The Walking Dead years ago, and there's a part where they're first getting to Alexandria, and she's like, and this is outside of Alexandria. She's like, why do the lawns look like they're mowed? If this is the end of the world, it's the apocalypse. Who's mowing the lawns? I'm like, come on. Let's just suspend belief for a little bit.
A little bit.
So I'm going to say the thing to you. Suspend belief for a little bit.
I, for the most part, I do. This is something I noticed in this episode.
So let's go a little deeper into things here.
Do it.
When Billy is scribbling all the different stuff on this children's, you know, crayon set at the restaurant or whatever, and he's writing things down, it's funny to me that, you know, he thought to write all this stuff down to try and get back to her, because I'm assuming that even though he knows the surroundings that he has, he still doesn't really know where that is.
No.
You know, so even with all this stuff, how's he going to use that? Because
right.
obviously we know Homelander saved him from the bomb, right?
Mm-hmm.
But assumedly he was unconscious or something between when the bomb went off and when he got to Becca's house, because he's like waking up in her lawn.
Yeah.
So aside from what he just saw around him, that's all he's got. And we kind of see throughout this episode a little bit of what's going on with Becca, but I'm not really sure how he's going to piece things together to get back to her with that little bit of info.
Yeah. Well, I think, he doesn't have a lot of information, but that's kind of like, I don't know, like the spy in him almost. Like, you got to do anything like
that's
that.
That's true.
And if he can piece and be like, okay, these three connect to each other and most other places they don't, then he can he's trying to narrow it down as best as he can.
Yeah.
And obviously in the beginning, he's remembering. He's trying to see if there's anything else he can probably write down or put in with the lot.
Because he's also unconscious when he's in the parking lot of this restaurant that he goes into.
And that's why he's so quick. He's like, I need to get up and remember all this that I saw.
Right.
You know?
So it's like, okay, is Homelander just like knocking him out before he drops him off in these random places or whatever?
Oh, I'm sure.
I probably not going to get an answer to that, I'm assuming.
No.
But
he's alive. I do want to mention he is alive because he even says to Becca this episode, Homelander does, we made a deal. And that deal is walking around alive and well right now, meaning he made a deal with Becca that he could be there and Billy doesn't die.
I took that differently. You're probably right now that I'm thinking about it, but I took that differently. I took that as the kid.
No.
That's what I took it as.
Man. Oh, also, side note, the baby for Madeline's alive.
Yes.
We did not mention that first.
Do we know that for sure, though?
Yeah,
they say it in the news broadcast.
Okay, yeah, the news says the baby's alive.
The baby was found like miles away from her house.
Yeah.
Which I want to touch on that whole situation, because throughout the episode they have clips of it's like a reenactment,
which is hilarious,
of Billy and Madeline. Essentially they're pinning Madeline's death on Billy,
yeah,
right? They have like a reenactment with Chris Hansen, of all people.
Yeah.
Where they show like a guy that's dressed up as Billy and a lady with dressed up as Madeline. And he's like, oi, shut up or I'll bollocks you.
Yeah, I'll bollocks you.
Terrible,
yeah,
which... terrible English accent. Like, I made that look good. Just saying that.
Yeah. Yeah, which also weirds me out how they know what went down in there.
Oh, you know how they know. Because Homelander...
It's a vault company owned by it.
Right, yeah. Right. Homelander, they I'm betting Homelander probably went and either fed them a story about what happened.
Yeah.
And just obviously took himself out of the picture.
Yeah.
Or something else is behind the scenes, like spinning this yarn. Maybe Vought knows what happened. Maybe Vought knows that Homelander actually killed her, but... You know, they don't want that getting out there, obviously. So they're pinning everything on Billy.
Yeah.
So there's probably a couple different ways there, but who knows? I doubt we'll get an answer to that either. But the funny thing is, so they have these clips that are going on the news and this reenactment and whatever. But throughout the episode here, you're also seeing that the boys are kind of...
They think he did it.
Yeah, they think that he did it. Or they, at the very least, don't know that he's 100% innocent in here.
Right.
And he even says to them, look, did I blow her up? Yes, but she was already dead.
Yeah.
But they don't even necessarily know if they believe it either.
Yeah, cause, I mean, nobody really trusts Billy, right? And they kind of started trusting Billy last season, but then the season finale kind of showed you can't trust Billy.
Right.
You can trust this Billy. It's not that Billy.
Yes. So, Homelander, he's... kind of, as we mentioned, spending time here in this episode at Becca's house.
Yeah.
He is trying to kind of connect with his son. And it's a very awkward, you know, relationship because Homelander's kind of almost trying to make it seem as if, like, I don't want to make it say that he's trying to make it seem as like he's been there the whole time, kind of, but not really.
Right.
It's very weird. And the kid... is his name Ryan?
Ryan, yeah.
So he's kind of going along with it, but also feels awkward as well.
Yeah, it's very awkward for the kid. Like playing catch, I think, is okay. Like, hey, you want to try to play catch, but you can tell Homelander's getting annoyed because Ryan's not good at catch.
Right.
And every time they have a conversation, like you said, it's almost as if Homelander is trying to make it seem like he's been living with him the whole time, and Ryan's just like uncomfortable with it.
Well, and... touching on the point where they were playing catch, you know, when Ryan misses catching it at one point, Homelander's like, all right, like, show me what you really got. You know, it's kind of reminiscent of like typically in movies and TV shows, you know, dads talk to their kid, they're playing catch, it's like, all right, give me a heater here.
Yeah.
You know, Homelander wants that too. But what he really wants
is superpowers.
Right. He wants him to show his powers. We know he has powers because the flashback of when Becca was going to the doctors, they see the glowing in her stomach. And even when we first see him at the end of season one, his eyes glow red. Now, I'm wondering here, though, the kid probably knows he has powers, too, but they make it seem like he doesn't.
I don't think he does.
How could he not, though? Like, if your eyes start to glow, do you not see glowiness going on? Like, I know us as people, I can't see my eyes.
Yeah, I don't know if maybe his eyes ever did that until maybe he met Homelander, or you just seen, I don't know.
Maybe. But even then, like, if that's the first time that it happened, I would assume, like, you're feeling something going on in your body.
Maybe. See, I don't remember seeing his eyes glow.
I could have sworn they did.
I don't remember seeing it. I'm going to go back and look at that.
I feel like they did. They had to have. Maybe it was a fever dream I had. I don't know. Crazier things have happened.
Yeah, but...
But I could have sworn in the end of episode one when the kid's running out and Homelander says, I'm your father, I swear I saw his eyes glow red. Tell us if they did or not.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and watch that. But
I feel like they did.
I don't remember it happening. I just kind of went with it. I was like, maybe it did, because second time around, I was like watching for other things, you know? So, like, in the background, see if there's anything small I miss. But
well, so either way, it's an interesting interaction there that I'm wondering, you know, what's going on, because the kid even kind of makes it seem like, all right, well, I can't do that, you know, or he asks him when he says, like, show me what you really got. He's like, well, what do you mean? And Homelander, like, throws the ball, like, assumedly into space.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know.
Yeah.
If he didn't throw it into space, that's going to hurt when it comes down to his head.
Yeah, it is. And then, I mean, later on in the episode, he's putting Ryan to bed. And he's talking to him like, you know, we're gods and all this. And Ryan's just like, I should probably go to bed now.
Yeah, it's definitely a very strange interaction with them. And like, the kid obviously knows who Homelander is.
Of course, yeah.
But he didn't know it was his dad. That being said, and I don't know, I don't have any personal experience with this, but I have to imagine if you're, this kid is probably 9, 10 years old. Oh, is that what they say? He's
7 or 8 because it happened 8 years ago.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So he's, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, somewhere in there. I'm imagining if you're someone who grew up that long without your dad and then you meet them for the first time.
It's not going to be automatically like, oh my gosh, we're going to be best buds.
I think it would be even more awkward than they're letting on the show here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just kind of strange.
It is. It's really strange. Let's stay on the topic of Becca's world. Let's just stay in this realm. Yeah. So at one point, she drops Ryan off for piano lessons.
Yeah.
And which
I want to ask you real quick. Did you ever have anything like that as a kid? Like piano lessons or this or that, whatever? Like
I had piano. I was actually pretty good at piano.
I had piano lessons too. But I was not good either. But I can remember my parents dropping me off for piano lessons at this lady's house.
At somebody's house, yeah.
Right, right. And leaving. And I'm thinking to myself now, I'm like, I don't think I would ever let my son just chill somewhere without me there.
Yeah.
It's just strange.
My mom usually actually sat out in the car, or she'd have to go run an errand and come back.
Oh, but no. Yeah. My parents left me there every time.
Yeah, not every time.
I went to piano
time.
Lessons for like a year.
Oh, I did for a couple years.
Oh, no. I think I did like 1 year. And then
I had recitals.
Did you?
Yeah, I did recitals.
Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she drops him off for the piano lessons.
It feels like a very classic, almost 50s neighborhood like that, right? Or early 90s, where like just kids, you can just run around and do whatever.
Right. And she even says, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have fun. I'm going to go have coffee with
Mrs. whatever.
Yeah, like a friend or a neighbor or whatever. But then the second she gets in the car, she's just like,
books it. And you start to see it driving pretty far distance, and it gets to a huge, huge wall.
Right.
And there's a gate with obviously like an office right next to the gate.
Yeah, like a security attendant.
Yeah. And she's pretty much like, hey, I got to talk to Dr. I forget. I got to talk to this person. Dr. Park, maybe?
I think you're right. Yes, Dr. Yeah. Park.
And so she's like, get him on the phone. I'll get him on the phone now. And then she's like, I know you're listening. And then so he does call and she talks to Dr. Park and she's like, I need him out of here. Talking about Homelander.
Yeah.
So to note, during this conversation, there's also security cams in Becca's house that you can see behind the security guard.
Yeah.
And Homelander.
And you can see Homelander around the house.
Yeah, he's snooping around. He's smelling stuff.
Yeah.
He's drinking milk, of course, smelling.
Very awkwardly again, too. Like, it's just regular milk in a jug,
yeah.
You know, in the fridge. But it's just, he smells the milk and he, like, sips it straight from the jug.
And it turns him on.
It's weird.
And you know what else? He was smelling stuff, but he was smelling, like, pants. He wasn't smelling underwear in a drawer. He was smelling pants. So, but then he's walking around the house, but she's saying, I want him out of here. And they're like, we can't do that. He knows about it now. She's like, then move us somewhere else. He now knows it's too dangerous to do.
Hopefully
this.
He'll just track you down.
And basically what he says is he'll get bored and leave. That's what we're hoping for.
Right.
And she's like, how do you know that? And I mean, honestly, when you think about it, that's Homelander's personality. I would think the same thing. Like, he's got other stuff he wants to do.
I don't know, man. Like, I think you're right in that.
That's what they would
if
expect.
This were any other situation, he would. But I think he's, so he had an obsession before, which was Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
Now that obsession is gone.
This
is his new obsession. Yeah, it's the kid. So it's like, I think they don't realize the level of his, like,
obsession.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, it comes down to the fact that, like, she's upset because they can't do anything about it, which rightfully so. I mean, he'll just go nuts.
Yeah.
And do something stupid. So they keep him locked. They say, just deal with it for now, which also sucks for her because if the story is true that he raped her, she's got to see him every day.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Has to be, you know, you'd essentially be reliving that memory every time you see them, every day, every second you're with them.
Yeah. So yeah, now you're worried about your kid's safety and you have to relive this every day.
Yeah.
So later on in the episode, they're back home at there, and this is like the good night scene between Homelander and Ryan. And it's, again, it's just weird. And he gives him a phone so he can call Homelander at any time.
Right.
And they're talking about not being alone because when you're gods and have all these powers, people aren't around you. And he's like, that's not how it should be. And again, Ryan's like, okay, well, I'm going to go to bed. But then as Homelander's leaving the room, he says, love you, son.
Yeah. And he doesn't say it back.
And Homelander goes, you can say it back.
Yeah. And I'm like, why would you think that a kid that you just met days ago
will say that?
Yeah. And I'm wondering, you know, in his head, is he thinking that he's going to say it back because now it's like, oh, I'm your dad. Now I'm back in the picture, you know, whatever. And he legitimately thinks that he's going to say it back. Or like I just want to know what's going on in his head, because any normal person, even if you were normal and like you just let that slip out,
you wouldn't have him say it back.
Yeah, you wouldn't be like afterwards, be like, yo, you can say this. Like, that's just weird.
So here's funny. Homelander's dumb, but he's also very smart. He's smart and he gets what he wants and knows how to like be like conniving.
Yeah.
But he's also very dumb when it comes to like common sense and how the world works.
Yeah.
So, well,
and I want to just touch on this real quick with Homelander and Ryan. So obviously he has some sort of plan, and this is, you're right. He has a way to, you know, maneuver through and navigate situations to get to an end goal, right?
Yes.
So I'm wondering here, is his end goal to get him to a point where he can start training this kid to be a sidekick? Does he want him to be like a replacement in case something happens to him? Really, if I'm Homelander, if I'm putting myself in his shoes, yes, he's my son, and yes, he's someone that I care about. But at the end of the day, Homelander and Billy are both people who, on, you know, at the root of them, from what people can see or what they allow people to see, only cares about himself. So if I'm in his shoes, if I'm putting myself in his brain, I'm trying to get this kid to be a weapon. I'm getting this kid to be something that I can use to leverage to get myself to a higher, you know, place. That's just my theory. I don't know.
I think it's pretty good theory. I think it's also a weapon in a sense of towards the media and more people loving him. Like, he has a kid who has the same powers as him.
I didn't even think of that.
You think of how like people love him, they're gonna love his kid. He's like, no, he's a family man too. What I mean? Imagine the ratings when you have like a son who has the same powers as you and you guys are flying around together.
Yeah, okay. I was coming more from like just from a power perspective. Like, if this kid has this, if he's Homelander Jr., you know, the world would not be able to, or very, it'd be impossible, next to impossible, to stop one Homelander.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking he's trying to have a Homelander too, so that, you know, no one can really stop them at all. But you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
If he has him there as like, Homelander's a family man, you know, almost kind of the same way politicians do it, where it's like, oh, I'm going around kissing babies and shaking hands. That's good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes I think.
Coolio.
But to finish off this world in this episode, after the good night and love you awkwardness, Becca's out the room and she's like, I want you to leave. And he's like, basically saying, I'm not going to. And then it gets real creepy because he goes, you're right, I'm not going to get bored.
See, and I'm wondering there, like, and maybe I missed something. Like, she didn't say to him.
No, he heard it.
Yeah, but how far, like, was he just... How far away from that was the house? Because it's like,
so
does he have just super duper duper hearing?
I want to say yes, he does.
Because I mean, like,
but I also so want to say he was looking around the room. And remember, they give you a hint that he saw the teddy cam.
Yeah, he saw the camera.
So he probably knew before that there were cameras in there. He was looking for them,
right?
So he probably knew, like, okay, he was listening around to see what's going on around him because
he can't hear through the electrical wires.
No, just in the world around him because he knew people were watching. I honestly, yeah, remember in the one episode, they's like, if an explosion goes off anywhere,
right,
he'll hear it.
Well, I don't think they said anywhere, right? But yes, and I get that, but an explosion is pretty audible to normal people.
Yeah,
him being super, you know, I can get that he'll hear it from miles away. But also, this wasn't an explosion. This was her talking to on a phone. The person next to her probably couldn't hear Dr. Park and her talking. And I get that he's a Superman clone, and Superman can hear miles and miles away. But I don't know. That part kind of threw me for a
little bit. See, I didn't throw me at all, because also I would think maybe he's, when she leaves the house, he's following her even with his ears. You know what I mean? Like, he knows to listen for her.
I guess that makes kind of sense.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But either way, it's creepy because he's like, you're right. I'm not going to get bored with this.
Yeah.
And
he's basically letting her know he's not going
anywhere. He's not going anywhere. And I just feel so bad for her.
Well, yeah, because now I have to imagine before Homelander got there, right? She obviously has some sort of deal worked out with Vought, right?
Yes.
But
well, that was a deal. She wasn't going to see him ever again.
Right, right. But my point is, she even though she has a deal with them and she's living her life, she probably also still feels very much like imprisoned.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so now, if she already has that feeling that she's imprisoned in this life, this made-up life for her, and now you're also in this prison, so to speak,
with
this guy, it's like...
Yeah. Also, not to mention, he threatens her with this. Like, hey, what do you think Ryan's going to do when he realizes his whole life is a lie?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know he's in this, like, big gated area.
Right.
And he's like, so what do you think? You think he's going to love you for that or he's going to despise you for it? Let's go find out in his freaking Homelander way.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, you're fucked up, man.
Yeah. I mean, and I think with that kind of stuff, I think that's what makes me like Homelander. I know he shouldn't be a likable character, but the way that he is able to plan ahead and, you know, just manipulate situations. Yeah. I'm just like, damn, he's such a good villain.
He is.
Because on the surface, he just seems like, you know, the Homelander that he portrays to the public is just, I'm just a superhero and yada, 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 and I'm Mr. Cool Guy and I'm, you know, America's shining beacon and whatever.
Do the right thing, yeah.
Right. But I also think, like, the perception is that he is a great superhero, whatever, but the public probably doesn't think he's a smart guy or that he has any brains or anything. He's just a brute force superhero that comes and saves the day.
Yeah.
But he really has the brains to go with the brawn when it comes to accomplishing a goal. Like you said, when it comes to common sense stuff or things that normal
right.
people would do, he's...
Because he didn't grow up in that life.
He's almost like a child in that sense.
He is.
But with everything else, it's like, you know, he's a high intellect individual.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But that's the Becca world. That took up a lot. That was actually a lot. Very important to this episode.
A good portion of the episode is the whole, you know... view of her life and what's going on there.
Yeah.
I want to next get into, and I know you're not so much hot on this, but I want to get into the Deep because he plays a good portion of this episode as well. So we found out from the last episode, the Deep, you know, he got put in jail for a situation at the water park. He gets bailed out by Eagle the Archer and he's meeting with a therapist named Carol. And
yeah.
for whatever reason, Fresca plays a big role in their situation. So the Deep is kind of I think when we first see him, he's like waking up on a couch.
Yeah.
And he's crashing at I think it's at the Archer's apartment or whatever.
Yep.
You know, and I don't know if he was like,
doesn't it look very similar to the Deep's apartment? Like that's is where they send them.
It's very cookie cutter.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost a carbon copy. But you know, he's like drooling on the couch. He's like, oh, thanks for letting me crash here. Yada, yada. And the Deep is still kind of confused as to why he's helping him. And you know, their relationship is just weird because this guy's coming out of nowhere to help the Deep, who everyone knows now what the Deep did.
Yeah.
Right. So you'd think anyone who's a hero, even a Vought hero, doesn't want to associate with him. One, because he's a shitty person, but two, because he's kind of like on the downward trend here. So if you're someone who's relying on your impression with the public and whatever, like, why would you risk being associated with this guy?
Yeah.
So we kind of start to see that there's maybe some ulterior motives here.
Yeah. There, I can't remember. Is the church of something, or I forget what company or brand this therapist is from.
Well, so I want to before we get into that.
Okay.
The Deep is talking with this therapist, and when we left off with them, the she basically says like, I can get you back into Seven, and I think that's when she shows him like a book or a pamphlet or something for this church.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not the same church that Ezekiel is a leader of.
No.
Good Samaritan Church or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
It's some other church religious type group, right? But it also seems like it's just a...
It's very culty.
Yes, very culty, and like not a, a church that is actually trying to make good things happen. So the Deep is having essentially a therapy session with this teacher.
Yeah.
Right.
And she has to, he has to draw himself.
Yeah.
Is one of the things he has to do.
Well, and so she's also trying to help him understand, again, like why he's doing what he's doing, whatever. And she touches on the fact that, like, you know, he has had nothing but bad relationships with women in his life. Mm-hmm. And that all the things that he's done have gotten him further down this path of having a shitty career and a shitty life, right? And she kind of at one point gives up on him and is like, I don't know if I can help him.
Yeah.
Right? She's saying this to Archer, the Eagle Archer dude. And he's like, well, I think I can make something work, right?
Yeah.
So he goes, comes back, and he's talking with the Deep, and the Deep's just not wanting to be there. He's not really, you know, understanding what's going on, but he's holding on to whatever sliver of hope that he can get back into the Deep or into the Seven.
Yeah.
Right. And he asks, you know, Eagle, like, you know, about him and what he's, what's going on. And he's like, oh, you know, we're just trying to help you get back on the right track or whatever. And he gives them something that he says will help him.
It's tea, but it's like over shrooms,
basically. Yeah, it's a hallucinogenic tea.
Yeah, which is great because one of my favorite things is he goes, oh, I've done shrooms before. It was at a Goo Goo Dolls concert, yes! Which is great because Goo Goo Dolls are awesome. But
yeah. So the Deep drinks this mushroom tea. And we see then that
he's rocking out to Goo Goo Dolls.
Yes.
And he gets locked into Eagle's room.
Bedroom.
And he's rocking out to Goo Goo Dolls, which is hilarious.
Yes.
I want to say, was it Iris? I think it was Iris.
I can't remember. I think it was.
Yeah. And he's singing along with it. So I want to real quick rewind. When he drew the picture of himself, the therapist was like, what didn't you draw? And it was the gills. He drew himself real muscular and cool, right, but with no gills. So he's in this room and he's high.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden a voice starts talking.
Yeah. And they're just like, hey. And he's like looking around. And he doesn't see anything. And they start talking again. And I think they even say, like, down here.
Yep.
And so he, like, realizes then it's coming from himself.
Within.
Yeah. And so I think they even say, like, let us out or some shit like that. And so he unzips his top half of his suit, and his gills are talking to him.
Yeah.
And he goes on this very, like, self-discovery type journey with his gills talking to him.
Who are voiced by?
Patton Oswalt.
Yep.
Hilarious. But essentially, and it's kind of, they go back and forth with him talking to his gills. But to make a long story short, his gills help him realize that he has been shitty to women because of a couple of things that, like, one event that, like, started a situation in which he was supposed to present an award to somebody, and he had what seemed, at least on the surface, like a consensual encounter with him, but he is remembering it wrong in his head.
Yeah.
He was having a seemingly consensual situation with a woman, but then thought that she laughed at him because of his gills. And his gills remind him, you didn't even take your shirt off, and you left her high and dry.
Yeah.
And you didn't even present this award to him. And he basically says, like, all of the insecurities that he's had about his gills is why he then does all of these terrible things to women.
Yeah.
Because he either thinks or has had situations where women have made fun of him for it or whatever, or he thinks that that's what's going to happen. So he's like, well, I'm just going to humiliate you before you can humiliate me.
Yeah. Pretty much get ahead of it because right. He's just so self-conscious about his gills. Yeah.
Right. Right.
He went on a journey.
He did. He did. And, you know, he's at one point he's even like trying to like break out of this room and he's banging on the door. And you see the Carol is the name of the therapist. You see her and Eagle Archer. They're out there just like kind of listening at the door.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, like, are they... In his head, his gills are talking to him, right?
Yeah.
Their voice with Patton Oswalt. But I'm wondering if to them, Are they just hearing him talk to himself?
I think so.
You know?
I would assume. And maybe not even hearing him talk as the gills, though. Like, it's just
that's him. What I'm saying. Like, is it like he's talking and then he's talking as his gills, like in a different voice?
Oh, I don't know. You know that's a good mean? Yeah, that's a good question.
That would be funny to if they show that later, like is that what's going on? But yeah. Anyway, yeah, so he kind of is realizing now, okay, this is why I've been so shitty.
Yeah.
But if I had to bet on it, I bet maybe he has this like self-realization type moment. He's gonna slip back though.
You think so?
I think so. He's even if he's good for a little bit, he's gonna turn into a shitty person again. I bet money.
Okay. I'm not saying anything.
I mean, you obviously know what's going on. And you know what? I can't wait till we get to the point where we're both caught up.
Yeah.
Because
then we can both have the same questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Which isn't gonna be that long.
No, you know, we've
got the rest
through.
Of this season and season three, but then neither of us have watched Gen V.
Nope.
So that'll be cool. And then, you know, when we're all watching season four, including with you guys, then we can all kind of have this conversation again.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else we want to touch on with the deep?
No, I fast forward through most of that.
Yeah, you know what though? You shouldn't, because it's disgusting for sure. Like, they did a really good job with making these gills
look real,
but also nasty.
Yeah.
So it's like I can understand why he would want to always have them covered up, because they look disgusting.
They do.
But yeah.
Sorry, deep.
Happens.
Yeah.
Happens. So I think we should probably go. Before we get towards the boys and what they
let's get girls get it done real quick.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I want to get on that.
We can fly through this, I think.
So the girls get it done press conference is something that Ashley had cooked up for Starlight and
Stormfront and Maeve.
And Stormfront.
Yeah.
And essentially, it was going to be a thing where this is the first time that they've had more than. That they've had three women as part of the seven.
Yeah.
And I don't think they ever mentioned it before, but I feel like before Starlight became part of the seven,
it was just Maeve.
It was just Maeve. So it's like, I'm wondering, you know, could this have also been something that they would have done when Starlight came in too? Because then there's more than one woman. Anyway, details, you know, whatever.
Neither here nor there.
So as they're getting prepped to go to this press conference, Maeve gets a phone call on her cell, and you don't hear who's on the other line, but she's essentially just like, oh my gosh, when? Okay, I'll be right there. And she's like,
Family emergency.
I have to go. I have a family emergency. And she's like bouncing out. And Stormfront, she's like, I have a family emergency too. Can I skip this?
Yeah.
And Stormfront, she's kind of just...
That's where you sort of see Starlight like finds her funny and kind of likes her a bit.
Yeah. So Stormfront, she's... I'm wondering what's going on with her, because Ashley did not know she was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Homelander does not approve with her. I don't know if Mr. Edgar brought her in, but it's just weird, because if she was approved by Mr. Edgar and she has this, you know, massive following on social media, because I think in the episode before when she's doing her live stream, like I think she had like a million people watching, right? And she's very clearly very vocal about how she feels about Vought, and knows, you know, that they're, you know, kind of frauds essentially.
Yeah.
Why would they want her in the seven then? There's got to be some reason to it.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
So, you know, they go to this press conference and they're setting up now. It's just going to be Starlight and Stormfront.
Yeah. Let's real quick go to Maeve. Let's just.
Sure.
Let's shoot this one out the way. So Maeve goes to meet with her ex-girlfriend.
Yes. She was in the hospital because her, like, appendix burst.
Yeah. Which sucks, I've heard.
I have no personal experience, but you have also told me that you know somebody who went through it, and...
it was terrible.
Not fun.
Yeah, so she gets there, and she's there for her, and she's like, you don't need to be here. She accidentally kept her as an emergency contact.
Right, right.
So basically they start to have they're starting to rekindle this flame while she's taking care of her in the hospital.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, at first her ex doesn't want her to be there at all.
Yeah.
But she can't really do anything. She's laid up in the bed. She's obviously still in pain from what happened, and she's recovering from the surgery from when they removed her spleen and whatnot. But slowly, as things go on, and they kind of cut back and forth between them and the hospital.
Yeah.
It slowly turns from, like, I don't want you to be here.
They're starting to flirt. And...
okay, like, you can be here, but we're just friends, to kind of more than that.
Yeah, because at one point she goes, Maeve brought her a gift. And she's like, what's the trade-off for this? And she's like, well, how about I take you out to dinner? The girlfriend is.
Right.
And she goes, oh, yeah, that's right. It can't be in public.
Right.
And this is where, this is the meat of the whole part, like, them getting back together is... Maeve finally breaks and tells the truth. Like, I went to a premiere to watch, was it 12 Years a Slave?
Yes.
Okay.
Which, great movie, but it's one of those types of movies that you only watch once.
Okay, see, I haven't watched it yet. I know I should.
You should. It's really good, but like...
it's depressing?
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe it. So, she's talking about, I think a writer or director finagled a way to sit next to her at the movie, at the premiere, and... is chatting her up all night, basically flirting with her. 2 weeks later, they find the director, house burned down or offices burnt down, and he's split in half.
Yeah, like half of his body is in one part of the building, half of it is in the other.
Right. And this is obviously during the time when she was with Homelander.
Right. And she doesn't, like, come out and say that Homelander killed this guy, but she, like, alludes to it.
Yeah.
And pretty much tells her, like...
I don't want that to happen to you.
Right.
And ex-girlfriend's really confused. What's her name? Can't remember.
Is it Christina?
Christina, probably.
I don't remember.
Sorry about that. We're falling apart. But she tells her I don't want to be with you. And then Christina, or what, ex-girlfriend,
yes,
goes ahead and is just like, what do you mean? And then she kind of puts the pieces together, like, Homelander? And Maeve very much says yes. Like, this is not what you think it is.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because, you know, the whole... time throughout season one, the public doesn't really know that Vought is evil. Like, maybe some people have an idea, but for the most part, they're just thinking, well, superheroes are good. They don't do anything wrong.
Alina. Not Christina.
I was close.
They rhyme, yeah.
I was close. But anyway, she pretty much... We get the sense here then that Maeve made that relationship go away because she wanted to protect her.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Alina, obviously, at the time anyway, thought, well, this relationship ended because of your alcoholism and this and that, whatever, which may have been a factor for sure.
Yeah.
But for the most part, she pushed her away as a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To keep her safe. Yeah. So we get that. We start to understand what really happened there, but like to understand, like, Maeve's not going to be honest with her. And like, hey, Homelander's dangerous.
Right.
But then we go back. Now let's go back and talk about Girls Get It Done. Now there's only two of them. It's Stormfront and
Starlight.
And
they're basically doing like a press junket.
Yeah. So it's a montage of all these different reporters asking basically all the same questions. Like,
yeah.
Are girl superheroes better than boy superheroes? What, you know, over and over and over again.
Yeah. It's very similar, like when you see movie stars promoting a movie, yeah, and they just essentially they sit in one room and then one after another, you know, Entertainment Weekly comes in, then MTV comes in, you know, whatever. All these different places are coming in and asking them questions. And most of the time, you're right, it's the same questions over and over. And so, at least when you see celebrities,
dumb questions, yeah,
right, they're just reciting the same thing over and over.
Yeah,
which you can see Starlight is obviously used to this because of how, you know, she knows what it's like.
And Stormfront's starting to get annoyed.
Right.
And I really love, like, her answer to, like, do girls really get done? And she's like, what does it matter if you have a vagina or a dick? Like, we're just superheroes. It doesn't matter. We just do the right, as long as you do the right thing and do the job well, who cares?
Yeah. Like, and I took that kind of, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, I didn't know what to make of her. Because if you look at this, and I don't want to, like, get political here or anything like that, but if you look at it through one lens, it's like, okay, we're looking at it as like, okay, everybody is created equal and we're all good and whatever.
Yeah.
Or you could be looking at it like, okay, well, you're saying this because you're trying to take down this evil corporation. So it's almost like you could look at it through one lens that's like a more liberal lens, or you could look at it through one lens that's more like of a conservative lens. I don't know. I'm not sure what to make of her yet.
Yeah, yeah. She's an interesting character.
Yeah.
But this also, again, Starlight like is loving it. She kind of laughs. She talks about how like Starlight's outfit's so skimpy. You can pretty much see up her fallopian tubes or whatever.
She goes, you can pretty much see up Starlight's uterus.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're all, you know, it's kind of turned into a good time. But
and Starlight even like is laughing at some of the comments and things that she's saying.
Yeah.
So it almost kind of seems like Starlight is like, okay, like I've got someone else here that's kind of on my side here.
Right.
Which we do get into that a bit.
Yeah, they have we'll hit that. They have a quick conversation, and at first Starlight is like asking her like about how she feels about Vault, and she's like, "Are you wearing a wire or something? Like, what's going on with you?"
Well, I don't want to get there quite yet because that happens a little bit later. At one point throughout this press junket, right, they're sitting there talking and whatever, and at one point they start to focus on Starlight, and they're like, "Hey, Starlight, you've been part of the Seven now, and one of your teammates has kind of been missing from the public eye."
Yeah, and you've been visiting him every day. And she's like, "Yeah, prayer is really good to help him, you know, get stronger."
Yeah, and so they're like, "What's going on with A-Train?" She's like, "Yeah, I really hope that he pulls through." I can't remember exactly what she said, but I think she said he got like injured on a mission or something like that. Whatever.
Yeah,
you know, they're spinning it, but then they're like, "Well, what if we told you he's right behind you?" And at first, when I saw this, I'm like, oh, well, it's probably going to be like a cardboard cutout or some shit that they brought out. But then, boom, he zips in, and Starlight immediately is like, oh, shit.
It kind of goes into slow-mo a little bit. All the music's gone, and it feels like when Huey has his panic attacks almost.
Yeah, oh, very reminiscent of that. Yeah,
yeah, and it's like
she like is like hugging him at first, like, oh, my gosh, I'm so happy to see you.
Yeah.
But then you just see on her face, she's like, oh, fuck, like, what is he doing here?
Yeah.
And you can almost kind of see she's thinking in her head, like, okay, does he remember what happened? You know, if he's here, has he told anyone yet? You know, you see the gears turning in her head.
And I love, because after this happens, they have a sidebar conversation. And I love that sidebar conversation. She, like you said, she's trying to see, does he remember everything that went down? She's like, I'm so glad I was there for that mission for you, A-Train, blah, blah, blah. I was telling them about this. And then it's quiet. Like, it's quiet for a bit. And he's like real nice to her this whole time, and all of a sudden he goes, "What'd they say about you helping your
traitor boyfriend,
your traitor ass boyfriend?" And she's like, "Fuck, he remembers." Like,
yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny because it's seemingly after the press junket, they're kind of having like an after party almost.
Yeah,
and A-Train is kind of back on top, so to speak.
Yeah,
you know, he was on shaky ground with Vought. In season one, like throughout the entire season. And after this press junket that's going on, he's there, he's got like his entourage with him. They see him and he's playing a little guitar. I wanna just mention this. He's like, "Yeah, you know what? I woke up and I just thought to myself, I want Prince's guitar."
Yeah.
So
Purple Rain.
Got that shit.
Yeah.
And he just like is sitting there playing Prince, and you could tell they made it look exactly like one of Prince's weird guitars.
Yeah.
But he's very, like, I'm feeling myself type.
Yeah, because she even asked you to play. He goes, "Nope, I don't. I just wanted it."
Yeah. But clearly, he knows what happened. She is wondering, like, if he's told anyone, and he doesn't really, he kind of just plays it off after that. Like, he went from, like, playing dumb to gotcha, bitch.
Yeah,
to back to just like playing it cool.
Yeah, because she even asks, like, "Who have you told?" And he just walks away.
Yeah, yeah.
So then to go with this whole storyline, we'll stick with this. The guy that gets his arm chopped off for shits and giggles comes and brings in, I think Gecko's his superhero
Gecko
name.
Yeah, because he can grow his limbs back.
Yeah, so he brings in, he does bring Compound V in a little pouch that has tampons in it as well.
Yeah,
so
it's a little pink pouch that it's like, he's disguising it with that. And it's funny, I want to just mention that his whole job at Vought is that they test products out on him.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, I kind of have to imagine they test anything out on him, because they don't make it necessarily clear that he can't die, but they know if, like, they do stuff to him, he'll recover. So when he goes to bring her this, he's like missing an eye.
Yeah, and they're and testing.
Like,
oh,
they were. I think it was like some shampoo. Or some yeah. Shit. So, and I'm like, geez, if that made you lose an eye, like
you better be getting paid big bucks.
Yeah,
buddy.
Yeah. But she's essentially like, whoa, like you can't do this here. Like we're in the middle of headquarters. Whatever, blah blah blah. Like I can't this. I can't have this right now.
Yeah, and he's
like, well,
too bad. You if you start it. Me again, I'm taking you down.
Right,
basically, because she even actually she. Cares or does care, and he's just like, you don't care.
Yeah, she's like, what happened to your eye?
And he's like, shut up.
Like, you give a fuck.
Fuck up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but at this whole time, you're kind of like, okay, well, she might be screwed here. And right before that interaction, she's talking with Stormfront.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, hey, I just want to let you know all the stuff you're saying are things that I think too. And I'm glad that you're saying it. And she's like, you think I'm going to believe you? You know, that's when she mentions, like, are you wearing a wire?
Yeah, because she's,
you know,
like, whatever. And she's like, you're the Vaudius of the Vault.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And she's basically, like, saying that she's their Barbie and whatever. And she's like, no. Like, Starlight kind of makes it known to her that she agrees with what she's saying, but not necessarily letting her know that, like, she's also trying to work to take them down.
Right. She also says, like, she's afraid to say something, to do what Stormfront's doing, because she
right.
get hurt or whatever.
Yeah. And it's funny because in that moment when she's saying to Starlight, oh, are you wearing a wire? Part of me in the back of my mind was thinking, you're probably the one
are you wearing
the wire.
A wire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and again, it's just weird because it's like, if she was appointed by Mr. Edgar and she's against Vought, she has to be like a double agent type thing where it's like, on the surface, I'm seeing like I'm against Vought, but really, like, I'm working for
him. I'm trying to get information. Yeah.
Like, no, not even that, but like, she's working for Vought to, to get information, be like, okay, well, Edgar has taken control of things, right? Especially with Madeline gone. He's now making all the decisions and whatnot. So in his mind, is he thinking, well, something is broken down with the Seven. I need to figure out. So I'm planting my mole in here. Just my theory.
Maybe.
Probably right. Maybe not. I don't know.
Maybe.
But at this point, she walks away, and that's when
Gecko
she gets the compound V.
And she puts it in her boot, and right. A-Train shows up. I know you're cool, Gecko. And what did you put in your boot?
And she's like, I don't have anything in my boot.
And there's a snake in my boot.
That's exactly what I thought when that scene happened. I'm like, oh, man, all I can hear is Woody right now. But he even, like, then frisks her.
Her boots, yeah, and finds nothing.
Yeah.
So and then we find out later, after the press junket is completely done, she's talking to Stormfront again.
Yeah.
The pouch is in Stormfront's backpack. She slipped it in there, which is also a nice conversation, like, she gives her Stormfront gives her a little bit of advice, like, hey, my favorite superhero was Pippi Longstocking. And when all the slutty girls on Halloween were dressed up as Disney princesses, I was Pippi Longstocking. They made fun of me. You know what I thought? I don't give a fuck.
Right.
I'm going to be me because that's how Pippi Longstocking was.
Yeah.
Also, it made me laugh because Starlight didn't know who Pippi Longstocking was. And I'm like, damn, I am old.
Yeah, I thought the same thing because I'm like, this isn't that long ago. And like, Starlight is young, but I'm wondering, like, how young is she supposed to be?
Probably like 20-something. Oh, she's over 21. She can drink.
Well, maybe not, though. Maybe there were plenty of, in real life, kid celebrities that were drinking when they were like,
yeah, but she went to the bar and stuff. That's what I was
saying. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I didn't think of that.
But, yeah, so they have that, but she's able to sneak out her thing, her pouch, to get it back.
Right.
I do like when Stormfront's leaving, she's like, also, a word of advice. Next time someone sticks a dick in your face, bite it off.
Yeah. Which, again, like, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds with, you know, that whole situation, but it's like some of her responses, if she's, I don't know, if she's there as a girl power type person, but like an edgy girl power type person, I just don't know whose side she's on.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying I disagree with what she said, but the way that she said it, I'm kind of like, something's off with this chick.
Yeah.
I don't know. The vibes I'm getting from her, I don't know what to think of her.
She's an interesting character. That's all I got, brother. Yeah. But anyway, so let's just finish off Starlight real quick.
Yeah.
Starlight gets back to her beautiful penthouse apartment. She goes to text Chewie from a phone she has hidden under like a cupboard and is like, hey, I have stuff. I need to talk to you now.
Yeah.
And as that's happening, you hear whoosh and A-Train's in there. And
he's like, who you sexting?
Who you sexting? And Starlight's like, get the hell out of my room, perv, you know?
Yeah.
And he takes the pouch from her. Sees a, she has Compound V. He takes it and they start having a nice, like, intense conversation. At one point, like, he's like, well, now I have this. I'm putting it out there. I'm telling everybody about you. And she gets a little nervous for a second, and then she gets back into, like, strong Annie mode. And she's like, oh, yeah, well, I went and saw the report about Popclaw and all those needles in an arm that quickly. And one even broke a bone or, you know, some shattered a bone. You think that's possible for her to do? You know, and she's like, so, you know, I'll put it out there that you killed your girlfriend.
Yeah, she pretty much, it was very reminiscent of, I think in like the second or third episode where she has that team up with the Deep. And right before they are going into that warehouse, you know, and he's telling her like, oh, you know, I'll tell everybody about what happened. It's not whatever. She like, same thing. She's like, tells the Deep, like, you're not going to tell anybody and you ain't shit, whatever. It was very much a similar thing.
Yeah.
Like, she basically like let him know, you're no one and you think you've got me, but you don't.
Yeah. And I think it's cool because I think she doesn't like doing this, but she's such a strong person that when she has to step up, she does it.
Yeah.
So she gets the Compound V back from him and he just walks out like, all right, you got me there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and like it, clearly when she's texting Huey and she puts the phone away, he whooshes in and he knows that she was texting someone. But I imagine he has to be fast enough that he probably could have, like, walked up, saw who she was texting, and then walked back and just playing dumb.
Yeah, maybe. I would assume she's texting Huey anyway.
You know what's funny? I thought in that moment that she was going to try and leverage the Compound V because she knows that he's, like, addicted to it or whatever. I kind of thought she was going to be like, yo, like, don't tell anybody. I'll let you have some.
Oh, see, I thought the first time I watched it, I thought she was going to be like, it makes me stronger. That's what I use it for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe played off like she's addicted too.
Yeah.
That's a good thought.
Yeah, but that's obviously not what happened because she's just
doing
her own
thing. Starlight is just Starlight.
Yeah, Citizen Starlight. But yeah, very intense there. But we're running out of time here, so let's jump on over to the boys.
Right.
And so Billy met with Mallory at the funeral. One, it's funny because he put the edible arrangements at the funeral,
which
is a thing between him and Rayner. So Mallory knew he was there. But they strike a deal. She'll help him find Becca if he can get the super terrorist.
Right. Right.
So this is where this adventure starts. They all are going out looking for the super terrorist. They find a place that he most likely is in. They get through the back door. It turns out it's a costume. It's like a Halloween costume place.
Yeah, it's very strange. Yeah.
Yeah, which is weird. So as they're going through, sneaking through, Kemiko just goes on her own.
Yeah.
And she just murks one dude.
Oh, yeah. Rips his head clean off.
Yeah. And Frenchie finds her, and he has the guy she killed has like the Rising Sun terrorist group.
And they're the terrorist group that held her and her brother captive.
Yeah. So she gets up. I think this part's kind of dope for some weird reason, but she jumps on top of all like the shelves and is looking around almost like a Batman would.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
Just looking around, seeing where he's got to go, and finds the super terrorist. And they actually start having a conversation. She's speaking sign language to him.
Right.
And he's, I don't know if he's doing sign language or he's talking in.
He's speaking in Japanese.
Japanese. Okay. So, but Frenchie puts it together with Huey next to him.
That's her
brother. He's like, boy, that's what she was trying to tell me.
Yeah. Because I think at one point she was even writing like girl and boy. And I think she was trying to refer to herself as girl and him as boy when she just doesn't know the word for like sister, brother.
Yeah. So this is where, so the whole episode, you also have to remember it's very intense between Huey and Billy. Huey wants to lead the right way. Billy wants to be Billy.
Right.
And do things his own selfish way. Well, Huey goes over to Billy and is like, don't do it. That's her brother.
Yeah, and Billy's just like, nah, fuck.
Cock that in, lever, ready to pull it, and Huey tackles him.
And he misses his shot then, right. Now, I'm trying to remember, I think what he was trying to shoot with was not necessarily something that was going to kill them, but like maybe, I don't know. I feel like at one point they had mentioned it was something like a tranquilizer, like a really, really strong tranquilizer. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't remember that part, to be honest with you. I thought it was going to kill him. So,
well, I mean, either way.
Because Billy would do that.
He would, yeah. But he misses the shot. And
Mr. Telekinetic, Kimiko's brother, just rips everything down on them.
That part was awesome.
Yeah.
I thought, like, he pushes all the shelves at them and, you know, they're trapped in. And then he just, woo, and, like, brings the, like, the roof down. Not the roof, but, like, everything that was above them.
The rafters. Yeah.
Just comes down on them. I thought, like, they were going to be, like, dead. Or not dead.
Hurt.
But, like, hurt really, really badly. They came out pretty much unscathed.
Yeah.
But him and Kimiko, like, get away then.
Yeah, and it's funny because Billy starts to walk towards Huey, and MM gets in the way.
Right.
And then this moment's great because Huey's yelling, like, that's her brother. Like, you know, she hasn't seen him for years. She would have gone nuts if that happened.
Right.
And Billy's like, we're going after him. We're getting this done. And they don't follow.
Right, right.
MM and Frenchie don't follow because they know Billy's selfish and does a lot of bad things to do what he needs to get done, whereas Huey's at least the guy who's, like, still cares about Kimiko.
Right. And Billy says to MM, he goes, like, so what? Her and her brother are more important than you getting back to your family? And MM's like, look, no, but...
She's one of us.
Yeah.
Which I love that. Again, MM just grows on you every time.
Yes.
And he makes a good point there, you know? And so he's like, no. And then finally, Billy goes, Becca's alive. And they're all like, as friends do, they're like, no fucking way.
But yeah,
MM but and them don't believe.
Yeah.
And MM was like, you're fucking with me. He's like, no. I saw her with my own two eyes. But and he kind of explains what happened quickly about how it goes down. So they're like, okay, we're ride or die now. Let's go.
Yeah.
So they go to chase after them. And Kimiko and her brother are now in like a park.
Yeah.
Just talking. And talking about how shitty it was for them growing up, how they did, that they're apart, that they love each other. She even mentions, like, the boys are, they help her and they can help him.
Yeah.
And you kind of start to see here that he thinks the terrorist group is correct. Like, because what happened was, because they talk about going back to the village.
Yeah, she's like, let's just go back home. And he's like, it's all gone. Like, Americans came and destroyed the whole place.
A superhero came and just destroyed.
Right.
And he's like, it's destroyed the surrounding villages. Children in schools died.
Yeah.
Propane tank blew up.
And you have to imagine it was
Homelander, right? It had to be.
Yeah, because he says he flew in, so.
Yeah, and somebody who has laser beams that could just blow up, like, villages surrounding another village.
I don't think he explicitly says laser beams necessarily, but
right.
To cause the amount of destruction that.
That's probably what it was.
Has to be.
And it blew up propane tanks, you know.
Yeah.
So he's pissed, and he actually wants to kind of do what he was sent here to do, which is be a terrorist to America and. I guess blow shit up. I don't know. So she's like, no, they're lying to you. Like, that's not really what's going on. I can help you figure this out.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm here to do something. I'm going to do it.
Now, this is the part that I loved about the episode, but that I wish were just a little bit longer. Because right when this happens, he's like, nah, you know, I'm out. I'm going to go do what I came here to do.
Yeah.
And he tries to go leave, and she, like, grabs his arm. Now, we all know Kimiko's, like, super duper strong.
Yeah.
And she almost, like, grips him, like, real tight, and you can kind of hear, like, a little bit of, like, crunching. I don't think she's, like, gripping him to try and hurt him, but she's, like, gripping
him
to try and keep him from leaving.
Yeah.
And he's just like... Nah.
Pushes her back and she flies into a car.
Yeah, he like uses his telekinetic powers, hits her right into a car, smashes there, and then he just like starts running. And she's chasing after him. At one point, she tries to jump and he turns around and just like freezes her in the air.
Which is crazy dope.
Yeah. And she's there and she's like, you know, trying to reach for him and he just throws her into a building.
And the brick breaks and falls apart. And she goes into some random apartment or something.
And then he's just peacing out. And, you know, then at one point, like, he kind of gets away and he's just, like, walking down then. And then, boom, she, like, jumps out and tackles him.
Puts him in sleeper hold.
Yo, he went night-night.
Real quick, yeah. She was like, go to sleep.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, I wish that this fight would have been just a little bit longer because it was maybe a minute.
If that. But it was really cool.
Yeah, but I feel like if they would have made that a little bit, you know, more, like, even if they extended by another, like, 30, 45 seconds, I think that would have been awesome. Just to, one, to kind of play up this whole brother-sister thing and the...
And the emotions of it all.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, and also, you know, we got to kind of remember here, Kimiko and him were both part of this terrorist organization. So they both have seen and probably done some bad things. And we're kind of, you know, at juxtapositions here because Kimiko is trying to, like, be like, hey, I've turned a new leaf. You can too. And he's on the other side of it. So, like,
yeah.
Extending that, I feel like, would have been a little bit better.
I do like, I forgot to mention this, but she talks about how sensitive he was. Like, he would nurse baby mice that lost parents.
Right,
out,
right.
Like, when they were living where they were. So, he's like, he used to be real nice and sensitive, and now he's just not pissed off.
But, yeah, so she puts him to sleep.
The boys just show up right then and there. And this part I love. Billy goes, at least somebody knows how to get the job done.
Right, right.
And she gives him the meanest stare, and he's kind of like,
yo, you just tried to kill my brother.
Yeah. Like, and look. He goes, like, his face is like, she could kill me right now if she wanted to.
Easily.
So, but anyway, they get knocked out brother, put into the van.
Yeah, they're all kind of getting in.
And it's just Huey and Billy. And Billy walks over to him and punches the shit out.
Slides the fuck out of him, yo.
Oh, my God. Blood splatters across his wrist.
Yeah.
And he's on the ground, and Billy says to Huey, you ever get between me and my wife again, I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, damn, you had this first season where they grew, and they grew together and really enjoyed each other, you know, and now they're at different ends because Huey's still a good guy, and he wants to always do the right thing, and Billy didn't, so now Huey doesn't trust him at all.
Right.
And so he tells Huey, oh, no, MM looks back after Billy gets in the car and's like, yo, kid, you getting in? And this is a moment where, like, first time watching it, you're questioning, is Huey going to go with him?
I thought he was going to walk away.
Yeah. And it looks like he's going to walk away because he gets to the door, and usually that's the scene where, like, the person decides, nah, nah, fuck this. But he gets in.
Right.
And then the camera just zooms in on him through the window, and he's just sitting there. He wipes his face, and you can tell he's questioning, do I want to keep doing this?
Right. Well, and he even questioned it, you know, in the first season when he wanted to essentially just, like, be with Starley. He's like, I can't keep doing this. So it's, you know, there's the continuing the theme of, like, his inner struggle with what's going on.
Right. And well, and this time it's because he wants to do what they're doing, but he doesn't want to do it with doing bad things.
Right.
Or at least extremely bad things, like killing somebody.
Right. Right.
Especially somebody's brother that you care about, you know? So the dynamic between Billy and Huey, it's very intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much the end of the episode there then.
Yeah.
And again, these first two episodes of season two, you know, a little bit slower paced, not as action packed. So I'm thinking the next episode, there's going to be some shit going down.
Yeah. I just really enjoyed the character building and between different characters.
Oh, yeah.
These
absolutely.
Last two episodes.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm excited for there's a certain character I don't want to say that as they grow or what happens to them, what you see happens. It's wild.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? It's funny, too, that I will say when I'm doing research for stuff, it's hard to not find spoilers.
I
haven't really seen many, or any really. I try purposefully when I'm doing research for shows or I'm taking notes or whatever, since this stuff has already been out for a couple of years now, I try to stay away from anything spoilery, right? But I had seen a picture of Stormfront before I watched this first episode.
Right? Okay.
And it was not a clear picture. And, like, I saw somebody new, so I, like, purposely tried to just divert my eyes. I won't lie. I thought it was Becca at first.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because, like, when I'm, like I said, if I see anything that's unfamiliar, I'm just like, I gotta scroll away from this, or I gotta, like, not read this or whatever. And so when I saw that picture and I saw just, like, a brunette, you know, with shorter hair, you know, I was just like, oh, shit, is that Becca? Like, is she part of the Seven now? You know, it was just... Whatever.
All I can say is,
no.
Girls get it done.
But see, you know, whatever. but anyway, yeah. So thank you so much for listening. We are both very excited to see where the rest of the podcast in general goes.
Yep.
I want to also shout out everyone who has been listening to our podcast for Avatar: The Last Airbender. The show's been very up and down in both of our opinions, but still decent. We're hoping that all of you that are listening are listening to both of our podcasts.
Yeah, and watching that show. You know, it's just a fun show to watch, you know, and maybe you can watch along with us.
But definitely stay tuned to this podcast for more episodes on The Boys. We are going to be catching up on everything up through season 4. Episodes of The Boys Small Screen Couch Commentary drop every Sunday, and episodes of Avatar The Last Airbender drop on every Friday. And we're eventually going to get to a point here where we might have another show in the mix. We might end up eventually getting to the point where we have 3 shows going on.
I don't know if I could handle it.
I don't know if we can either, but we're going to find out.
There's only one way to find out.
We're going to do it for the people.
Yeah.
So check us out. As a reminder, we are now on Twitter. So we're posting, or X, you know.
Formerly known as Twitter.
But we're there now. So if that's your preferred social media network, check us out on there.
Start up a conversation.
Little, yeah, it's a little more difficult to post on Twitter than it is some of the other social media sites, but we're going to do the best we can. Hit us up on there. As always, look out for full-length episodes of the podcast on wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple, doesn't matter. We're also on YouTube and TikTok and Facebook. We have to shout out the Facebook crew because that's where we probably get the most engagement.
Yeah.
But, stay tuned for next episode. Peace.
Peace.